Hey everyone, a few quick things before we start today's episode. Number one, we recorded this a few weeks before the revival news hit, so parts of the conversation are woefully out of date, specifically when we're talking about the end of this podcast. And number two, we, in this episode, start doing a spontaneous music video commentary, and that might be frustrating just to listen to, so for your viewing pleasure, we've included in the episode description and on our YouTube page, I'm sure you can find links for it on our social media. We're going to include that music video with our audio commentary so you can watch it for yourself because, oh man, it is good. So you really, really need to watch this. So check it out, and I hope you enjoy today's show.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hey everybody! Today's episode is brought to you by Squarespace.
Yee-haw!
Start building your website today at squarespace.com. They got great tools, intuitive, easy to use, starts at $8 a month. And if you sign up now, you get a free domain name for a year.
So you can start your free trial today with no credit card required at squarespace.com. And when you sign up, be sure to use the offer code GilmoreGuys to get 10% off of your first purchase. First purchase.
Squarespace. Build it. Beautiful. Beautiful, bro. All right.
So the other day, I'm eating grilled jerky as I do on a daily basis, and I realized this jerky is soft.
Yeah,
it's not very tasty.
Yeah,
feels like I'm eating just raw paste. I need to get something new in my life.
Oh man. Well, first of all, go to the doctor if you've eaten raw paste. You're probably in the process of dying right now.
Oh no.
And number two, go to your local store and get some Ballpark Flame Grilled Jerky, dude.
Whoa, is this jerky?
Let me tell you about it. The makers of America's favorite beef hot dog have just
Ballpark?
Yeah, bro. Ballpark Flame Grilled Jerky is dried for toughness and then flame grilled for uniquely tender texture and superior char-grilled flavor. Is your mouth watering, dude?
Yes.
Okay.
Some of the flavors.
All right, well, let me tell you. It's original beef, bourbon barbecue beef, peppered beef, barbecue pork, teriyaki pork, all those.
That's incredible.
You can find it at a store near you in resealable pouches.
There's so many stores near me. I gotta go.
Yeah, go to all of them.
Bye, I'll be right back.
I guess I have to do the show alone now. It's Kevin's time to shine. Ballpark Flame Grilled Jerky, available in a store near you. Demi, I feel unsophisticated. I feel not fit for society because when I start talking about wine or wines I've drunk or drank at parties, I sound like a real dummy because I don't know anything and all my wines suck and I don't know what to do. I don't know how to improve myself and make people love me at parties.
Well, I don't know how to make people love you, but they'll love your wine cellar if you sign up for Club W.
Okay, tell me more.
Club W is leading the grape-to-glass revolution, all right? They send wine directly to your door, and it's perfectly customized to match your taste, all right? You go online to Club W, you set up a palate profile, they select some wines that they think you're going to love, and they send it straight to your door.
Okay, they're leading the grape-to-glass wine revolution?
They sure are. They work with vineyards directly to cut out the middleman and save you money. So, with Club W, you get premium wine customized to your taste at a third of what you'd pay at the store.
I like saving money.
Well, you should go to Club W then, because they got a 100% no-risk guarantee that you'll love what they send you.
Are they offering some sort of 50% off the first order if you go to clubw.com/GilmoreGuys?
They absolutely are. clubw.com/GilmoreGuys, guys. Go right now and sign up and get 50% off your first order.
So I'm going to stop wasting time and messing around at retail stores and start drinking wine I know I'm going to love.
You absolutely should. Again, that website is clubw.com/GilmoreGuys. 50% off.
Club
100%
W.
100% on taste.
Oh, yeah. Club W. Drinky, drinky.
Yeah, we're going to work on a slogan for
okay,
that.
Yeah. I'm excited. There's some voicemails to listen to.
Sick.
This sick voicemail. My best friend bought a poopy poo.
She loves like, well, Gilmore Girls, and I hate your podcast.
Oh no!
La 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 la.
I've never really tried to do a Sam Phillips impression like la 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 la. I can't. I don't.
La 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 la.
Well, it's just a falsetto voice.
La 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 la.
But sometimes she sings really low, like I can hit it.
La 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 la
Volume 8. Oh my gosh, we're doing it.
Volume 7, 8, 9.
Welcome to Gilmore, guys. I'm Kevin.
I'm Demi.
And we're the Gilmore guys. And we're going to read some Gil mail.
Sure are.
From all of you listeners out there. And probably get into what's happening in late night television today.
Yeah, this is now the segment where we just talk about, you know.
So, how do you think we solve feminism?
I think that feminism was broken before we were born onto this earth.
Yes.
By born, I mean blessed. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we were like, zap, you're good. Ladies are good now.
Zap, and, ladies are good now.
You know, you're welcome.
And it's been an uphill battle ever since. Uphill is in, it's getting better. Oh, but in all serious, here's what I was thinking about. Wouldn't it be cool if for the last, I would assume the last episode of this podcast would be a live show. I assume so.
Probably have to be.
Right?
And then we sit in a convertible and fly into the sky.
No, it's not Greece.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but I was thinking, you know, maybe we have a guest, maybe we don't, but wouldn't it be cool?
Yeah. The only thing about saying this on air is now it has to happen.
Oh, shit. Well, no, you know what? I'll just, I'll bleep what I just said after wouldn't it be cool if
that
bleep.
You should do that.
Okay, I will. Yeah.
People are going to be so mad.
Anyway, it was just something I was thinking about. You know, sometimes we start with male and female male, but I'm going to start with a voicemail. So let's go to the voice. Wait, do I have it on here? Let me make sure. So let's go to the voicemail bag. And I put out the call. We put out the call on Twitter earlier today. Got some cues? Leave a voicemail. We'll answer them. And we're going to look and see which ones are the... Ooh, here's a good one. 18 seconds long. Let's check it out.
Hi, this is Emily Marsh from Redwood City. And my question is for both Demi and... everybody on the show, of course. But
me.
For season 7, since neither of you have actually seen it, what would be the one thing you would hope to see on season 7? Thanks. Bye.
Hope to see.
I want Lorelai and Luke to be in a fight, and then Luke fixes it by performing a musical number.
Oral. Oh, I see.
Okay. Yes, by performing oral, and then performing a musical number.
Damn it, Lorelai, I'm sorry.
Yeah, or something where it's like she talks about how much she loves the Bengals and Luke is like, I'm not into them. They fight about something else. And the end of the episode, he goes, Lorelai, wait. And he's like, close your eyes, lend me your hand, darling.
So you hope that one of the characters sings to each other to like in a poignant and emotional moment, like Luke and Lorelai sing to each other.
Yes. I think it wouldn't fit the show at all, but I'd also be like, if you're gonna go off the rails, I want you to go way off the rails.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
what do I hope to see? I guess I hope that regardless of whatever core things they might get wrong. You know what? That's a false assumption. Let me back it up. Like my daddy taught me good. I hope that I still have fun with the townies. That all the townie stuff, yeah, maybe Demi's right. Like they ratcheted the crazy up to 14 or something instead of like, oh, Babette's kind of weird. No, make her insane.
Yeah.
Make her like give her the weirdest stories. Like, hey, sugar, I'm opening a brothel.
Or, well, right, yeah.
Or like just give her just insane stuff to do. Give Michelle a girlfriend or a boyfriend, whatever the case may be. Let's go to another voicemail.
You know what? Give Michelle a brother that comes to town and he has to deal with for an entire 3 episodes.
3 episodes. There's no other characters. It's a bottle episode.
I want it to be a brother that is also just like beloved by the entire town. He's just like, I hate him. He's evil. How does nobody see it? And maybe when we see it's just him and Michelle, he actually is evil. But he's like, no one will believe me. It's like, because you're crazy, Michelle. He's evil. He's evil. He's stealing the bathrobes.
He's
and
his
no
Keon.
One believes him. Exactly.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Here's another voicemail.
Hi, guys. It's Jessica Frey from Anaheim. And I just watched the latest episode, Emily Says Hello, I think it is. And every time I watch it, I just feel so bad for Marty because I just feel like he understands Rory, you know, comes from like, you know, Stars Hollow Live. And it's just, it's so funny rewatching it and seeing like Rory, like also like Logan more and kind of, you know, like that life privilege. And they have this one line when they're eating their hors d'oeuvres where they're like rich people, huh? Or something. So I feel like it was really interesting kind of like just seeing like Rory's development, but I really want like Rory to just like give in. It's like them sitting on the couch, give like in. Eating food. Such a great moment. Also, what do you guys, and just, okay, but that's all. I just wanted to call in and give my take. Okay, bye.
What was her other question? That was a cliffhanger.
Yeah. I don't know about describing any romantic feelings as giving in. Although, I get it, but also...
Yeah, I understand that.
I think Marty could be a good match for Rory, but I think that they are also doing this thing where they want us to feel bad for him, and it's not working for me because they make us feel bad for him by showing how much it hurts him. Are we getting a call right now?
From Marty!
We're answering... Oh, wait, no, don't answer this. Okay. We'll cut this out.
Yep.
Marty is someone that works over at HeadGum, helps us with ads. He's great, so shout out to Marty.
Big Stars Hollow.
Yes. What was I talking
about? Oh, well, I think in retrospect that Marty is less sympathetic because of what, kind of because of the points that Jamie brought up. He kind of did, not that I was like so team Marty, but it's like, bro, if you're feeling it, got to make it known, got to be clear. Don't put Rory in, like the emotional entrapment that kind of happens in 509 and 510 is not sympathetic. Like, I don't have a lot of sympathy for, like, poor Marty. I'm not on that train. It's like, no, you can, it's, I guess it's kind of sad that she doesn't see that she, that you like him, that you like her, and that you're a good and really solid guy. But be more decisive, be more bold.
Yeah, I think the kind of person that Marty is someone that is very much born of, like, television and movies, where it's like, it's the lesson of TV and movies where it's like, if you hang around, they'll eventually realize that you're the one that's been there all along. And it's like, that's not only how it happens in real life, but also very unhealthy for you to be like, they'll know one day. And then when they don't, you go like, how dare, I don't know. But I think that I simultaneously feel bad for Marty because I think they'd be a good pairing, but I don't feel bad because they sort of angle it in a way that it's like, don't you feel bad for Marty? Look, he's so sad. And I'm just like, okay, but he can either, you know, be fine with being her friend or get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he can't be fine with just being her friend, then he should cut loose and go deal with his mopey self elsewhere.
Right. Oh, yeah. Marty, go fuck yourself. I'm just kidding. Here we go. Here's another voicemail.
Hey, Kevin and Demi. It's Angel Week. I met you guys in D.C. I helped sell your stuff. Anyway, what I'm calling about is I feel like season 5 is when Luke becomes really inconsistent, and then they just start dumbing him down from that point. So, like, we have him playing golf with Edward, and he's like, I didn't read a book, and he's acting all stupid, and I just don't see that being true.
Dick.
Especially when we see him cooking Lorelai a gourmet meal, and then we see him in the kitchen with Suki, replacing Suki, I should say, making all these elaborate things and, like, being really smart about it. And then all of a sudden we just kind of have him being stupid again. And then, like, in season 6, I know you're not there yet, Demi, but he, like, they go away with Logan and he's never tried lobster again. And I just have a real problem with his inconsistency and with his intelligence. And I just kind of wanted your take on that because I have an issue with that. I just, you know, I feel like he's such a great character. I don't see why we have to dumb him down so much. And I just kind of wanted your thoughts on that. All right, thanks. Bye.
That's a good query. What I would say to that first is that I don't translate intellectualism and literacy of, like, I'm a great purveyor of Philip K. Dick novels with knowing how to make a flambé or whatever the case may be. Like, I don't see those as being so one for one connected that doesn't seem like an inconsistency. If there's a weird lobster thing in season 6, I might be forgetting where it's like, what's a lobster or whatever he says. Maybe that, but I don't see him getting dumbed down quite yet.
I don't either. I feel like we might be seeing some inconsistencies in just how he acts around, like, Ed, M, Wait, she said Edward, and I was very confused.
Richard,
yeah. And like things like making a gourmet meal, but I feel like all of these things are things he's doing to sort of impress Lorelai, and it falls in line with the character of him. Like him making a gourmet meal is not something he does every day downstairs.
Yeah.
And him like talking about like Dick and whatnot. Like I feel like people don't know. I mean, people know Philip K. Dick, but largely because all of his short stories have become movies in a way.
Right. The inconsistency I see with Luke, and really, I just go back to that one episode in season 4 where Lorelai's like, "You've never seen Casablanca?" That to me was really shooting themselves. They could have made it something else or had Luke, because he was like, "Yeah, I've only seen like 3 movies," and he knows Little Rascals and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That stuff kind of drives me nuts. But also, I think there might be an interesting sort of, not in a sexual way, but the men in Gilmore Girls, I think Amy Sherman-Palladino to a degree objectifies them in the sense that they are objects in the story of these girls rather than sometimes living, breathing people. Would you agree with that? That sometimes they just kind of act as like, there's this thing, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree. Mostly because they always, all of the men in the show act as a sort of tangential characters that are only existing as foils for the women, which is exactly how women are usually in every other form of media. So it's just
right. So it's not criticism per se. It's just like kind of a flip.
Yeah.
Or is it a criticism? I mean, sometimes I do see, like, when they give Luke, like, stuff with Liz and TJ and stuff apart, like, with his direct relationship with Lorelai, maybe there's just, like, the occasional objectification.
I think they're much better about it with Luke because he started out as a character and then turned into a love interest, even though he's supposed to be a love interest the whole time. But kinda, with Rory's boyfriends, they're very bad about it. But it's not a thing that I care about because I often just like, I'm glad we don't get to see this guy more often.
Right.
Although sometimes I feel like if we did get to see the boyfriends more often, we might like them more, or like if we had more depth to them other than what how they react to Rory.
Well, I even think about that scene in 501 where Dean goes home and yells at Lindsay for answering his phone like a normal person or whatever, and he's like, "You don't even think, do you?" And that's one of the only Dean scenes we see that follows him apart from like direct interaction with our main characters. And while that scene obviously didn't make me like him more, it did give depth to the character and like how he was, he's feeling probably terrible about this on some level and he's lashing out. It's taking a form of anger. So, you know, maybe if there were more of those scenes with like Logan and Jess where it's like it followed the characters home in a way, like literally, figuratively, but then in Dean's case, literally. And you saw like, oh, this is what they're going through emotionally and not just in relation to Rory and what he needs to be in her story. So Jess needs to be distant weirdo guy. Okay, let's make him distant weirdo guy without kind of the organic storytelling of telling us why that's the case.
Right.
Let's go to another voicemail. Ooh, 47 seconds. Under a minute. Love it.
Hey, fellas. It's Nicole. I'm a ghillie from Dallas and was calling to ask you if you guys were Lane and you had a friendship with Rory like Lane has, where it seems pretty one-sided. Rory never seems to call Lane or check up on her, see how she's doing. Would you still be friends with her? Would you have a confrontation with her about like, "Hey, man, I'm here with you for all of your issues and problems, but you never call me." Do you think that's just like a trope of the TV show where Lane's not the main character, so why would we follow up with that? Give me your thoughts, because I have major issues with it. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
I do think it's a trope of TV where the main character, especially if they've got their own stuff going on, is not going to be there every episode with all of her friends, you know? Mm-hmm. It's kind of how... Like, Rory's kind of friends with Zach and Brian, too, but they're never in scenes together. But we don't care, obviously, because we are introduced as Rory and Lane are friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just, there's no reason for them to be in, like, for all of the things the show does, there's nothing they would want to cut out to put in them just being like, hey, how are you? Oh, I'm good. What's up with you? And just, like, talking about their lives to mm-hmm. each other. Because there's nothing they can do for each other at this point in time other than be like, that's crazy. Like, other than be a shoulder. And I don't think... I'm thinking of if I were Lane and this was happening, and I feel like I wouldn't have a problem with it because I'd have my own stuff going on.
Well, here's what I would say to that, too, is... Lane not being like, what the hell, Rory?
Mm-hmm.
We need to bring that segment back, by the way.
What the hell, Rory?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that does not occur, I think, is also, I don't think it's an oversight because they're set up to be best friends, but they're not functionally best friends.
Right.
Functionally, her mom is her best friend. So maybe Lane's like second best friend or whatever. But I think even that in the adult nature of like, and then you go to college and you're kind of still friends with them, but not really. And a lot of people keep those connections and do it really well, but a lot of people don't. And I think it's okay.
Right.
Here's what I think it is, really. And it's something I don't remember if I've talked about on the show or not, but I feel like guys in general don't have as many best friends, quote unquote, growing up, especially in our like 20s and 30s, because... I don't know, because we don't. There's probably people in our life that are functionally our best friends.
Right.
You know, who are like, oh, you know, just given the amount of time and the intimacy of that time, like, oh, that person's, this guy or this girl is my best friend. But I think guys are less likely to use that label. Here's what I think, and not even that, like, and women do, and it's a mistake. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the women, I think, are more open to... making themselves vulnerable for that connection. But that connection is a double-edged sword in that I feel like the label of best friend puts a pressure on the other person.
Right.
So if I say, Demi, you're my best friend, and then Demi's like, what if Demi doesn't feel the same way?
Right.
You know, what if it's like not totally mutual and not even like in a crazy way where it's like 0 and 100, but maybe I'm at a 85 and he's at a 72, you know, that's just not, it's not quite there in terms of like how we're lining up. But then because I've applied this label best friend on him, he feels this weight, this pressure to, okay, I guess I'll hang out with you again if no one else is hanging out, you know, and these certain things. And that creates in me an entitlement like, Demi, why weren't you at this thing? You're my best friend. You should have been there.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not discouraging close relationships and best friends, but I think that's a hard title to carry in a lot of ways, especially as you get older. So I think Rory and Lane not doing that so much as Rory goes to college and goes on rich white boy Yale adventures and Lane is doing her band stuff. I think it's fine. I don't see it... In the context of season 5, I don't see that as an issue. Now if the question is more like if Lane is helping out with all of Rory's stuff and Rory doesn't seem to show that much interest in Lane's like band and all that life, then yeah, maybe that's more of an issue and that's something that's not quite as much of a macro issue.
I definitely think it's a problem of what they discuss when they're together of like, are they always talking about just Rory or are they always talking about just Lane? Which doesn't seem to be that bad, but then again, we haven't seen them together in so long.
But also, some people, I would say, are set up like that.
You're right.
Some people do say, like, oh, Demi, what's going on with you? Oh, tell me more about that. And are genuinely interested in a way that you're not, like, dominating or hogging or being selfish about the conversation.
Right.
But they're just so good and intent. I have a few friends like this, and I try to be that friend often, but, like... They're so good and intent about, like, what's going on in your life? I really want to know.
Yeah.
To the point where it's like, oh, an hour and a half has passed by, and we haven't talked about you at
right.
all. You know? People like that exist.
That's how I am. My friends don't know much about me, which is frustrating for them, but it's also just like, I don't want to talk about me. I don't have shit I want to talk about. Like, if
I live with me every day.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing of, like, if I have something that I'm very much like, I got to tell you guys, you already know. Like, mm-hmm. I got excited and I told you immediately.
I tweeted it. Follow me on Twitter.
Exactly.
You want to know about my life.
But other than that, I'm just kind of like... There's nothing going on that matters, really. I went to work today, and now I'm here. Let's eat. What's up with you guys? You have more interesting stories, and you guys are, I don't know, you know?
I sympathize with that, but then I think you do, when I'm in that situation and I realize I've talked about myself for 45 minutes, I do kind of sometimes feel robbed of like, no, but I want to care for your life. So, you know, in a way, it's like giving is receiving, receiving is giving. So you're giving that person the gift of like carrying that interest and bearing your burdens in a way. Oh, this is a long one. Minute 23. Let's check it out.
Hey, Kevin and Demi, it's Megan from Providence, and I've been watching Gilmore Girls for years since it began, and now on automatic loop, just like Sarah. And on that last episode, you guys were talking with Sarah how it's pretty unrealistic that Rory starts doing her hair and has those amazing curls. While I agree with Sarah, I always took it as that this was the first time she was actually excited about a guy and going after him rather than the other way around. When
Logan,
Dean and Jess always came after her, whereas this time, a little bit of spoiler for Demi, but you see that Rory really is the one doing the chasing. And I think that the hair outfits that kind of pertain... she starts showing that. I think she's starting to realize that she can just be like Lorelai and be the one chasing after the guy a little bit too. That was my take on it. I think Sarah was right in pointing out that it was a little unrealistic that Rory was getting up at Yale before classes and making her hair look that fabulous. But that was just my two cents. Thanks a lot, guys. You guys make me laugh all day at work, and I really appreciate it. Thanks.
I hope we're getting a lot of people in trouble at work. Like, hey, Sarah, what are you doing?
That's the fifth person I've had to fire for listening to that damn podcast. I don't feel like Rory is pursuing Logan at all yet.
Yeah, so just to recap, as of recording this, we've watched through 5:11. The next one we'll record and watch is 5:12. And yeah, Rory seems like, Paul F. Tompkins was pointing out, very passive and uninterested in the life and death, or at least not activated by life and death brigade stuff. And by Logan, she just seems annoyed, and what he did to her, not as cute as Pushkin. There's no chasing going on at this point. And what we were talking about hair-wise was happening in those early episodes. So if she's chasing him, quote-unquote, then it's a big secret, and it's not clear from the text of the show. It'd be very deep and subtextual.
Also, I don't feel like Lorelai pursues men either.
No, she doesn't. They fall at her feet, right? Which is fine, you know.
Yeah,
most girls like that. Most girls like being pursued, right?
Women be loving it.
But am I off in that?
I mean, I feel like everyone likes being pursued, just in the sense of like, oh shit, that's super flattering that someone's into me.
Right, but I'm saying women don't like being the ones that have to pursue oftentimes.
I think historically, no.
Historically, yeah.
But I don't know. I disagree is what I'll say to that.
Right. This little app of mine keeps freezing. iOS 7, man.
iOS 7?
Or 9.
Upgrade, no.
iOS 2, loving it. Okay, here we go. Here's another voicemail.
Hi, Kevin and Demi. My name is Randy from West Virginia at Trixie Shakewell. My question is, well, my stupid sister won't listen to the show. So she is Team Dean, and she hasn't watched the show for a while, but we've seen it many times over and over. But anyway, she wouldn't believe me that most of your listeners are not Team Dean, at least not anymore. And I remember them being very Team Dean in the beginning. Do you think it all goes along with the show? And do you think you've had influence over what team your listeners are on or not? Do you think there was a bigger Team Dean following in the beginning and it dropped off when it became such a D-bag? And
Dean bag?
That's about it. How would you rank the teams right now? Team Dean, Team Jess, and Team Logan.
How would I rank them?
She doesn't believe me that Team Jess is so high, and has that dropped off, and has Logan just taken over? Okay, that's all. Thanks for answering. Love you guys. Bye.
One thing I want to point out, because she said Dean bag or D bag, and then I heard Dean bag. On the twat boards, people called him Deanus, like penis.
Oh, Jesus. I find it funny that her sister doesn't believe the Team Jess fanfare because it's all we hear. But I also do...
It's not all we hear, but it's a lot of
it. Yeah, it's really like the Team Dean is so invisible. And maybe it's because
Rose Abdu.
Maybe it's because they've been shamed into submission. But I think that a lot of the Dean draw is he was there at the very beginning. So you're sort of set up to believe that he has to be the true love. And yeah. for him to have left the series is maybe something of like, oh, he had to leave the show and not like, oh, it was always destined for him to not be the love.
Right.
But I don't know. It's definitely a thing of like Team Jess is the most people, then Logan, and then Dean.
She also mentioned the idea of have we influenced people's opinions?
I hope not.
Well, okay, here's what I would say to that. Is I hope people and everybody, and just including ourselves, always allows themselves the ability to change their mind about something. And we're not again, we talked about a little bit with all the Jess defenses we get that are super long. We're not trying to posit our opinion as right or right. correct or the best.
We're not going, how dare you people think
yeah, that? It's just our opinion, and we can be wrong about it. But sometimes we do get emails that are like, I love Jess, and I listened in as you guys kept talking about it. It was interesting how, you know, I changed my mind a little bit regarding all that. Or for whatever the case may be, whatever part of the show. I didn't think about that, and then I thought about it. Or now I didn't think Lorelai was selfish. And again, as a byproduct, as collateral of what we're doing, not the intent of what we're doing.
Right.
Because, I hope that I change my opinion at some point about something on the show because I think that'd be interesting. Like, maybe we get into season 6, I'm like, oh, I hate Logan. Never mind. Just kidding. You know? And that's actually why I like that we disagree so much on Logan is because it's a built-in comprehensive perspective. So now people listening, most people can enjoy what Demi's saying. let me try to find the voicemail, but while I'm talking about it, in case I can't find it, one thing that was interesting is that someone left a voicemail, I believe, that on the subject of Jess, why do you think so many people have forgotten that he kind of put Rory through sexual trauma and in that episode? Oh, here we go.
Hi, Kevin and Demi. My name is Nora, and I'm a huge fan of the show. I'm calling with a question about Jess. First, I want to say you guys have totally changed my tune on Jess. I was formerly very strongly Team Jess and have come to see the error in my ways and really despise him as a character now. But my question is about something that happens in the party episode at the end of season 3, which I know is sort of far past where you guys are at in the podcast now, but I've been talking about it with my friends. And my question is, why don't people remember that Jess tried to sexually assault Rory? It's a pretty horrible thing, obviously, and I have taken an informal survey of several of my friends who are all Team Jess, and when I bring up that scene, they seem to not remember it or definitely need to be reminded that that happened. So I'm just curious about why you think that is. Is it because of how the show treated the whole incident or about the cultural moment in which that episode aired? I don't know. I just find it really peculiar and would love to hear your thoughts on that whole arc and particularly how the show treated it or didn't really – or glossed over it, frankly. So anyway, keep up the good work. Love the podcast. And hopefully I will get to hear your thoughts on this and talk to you soon. Bye.
I think a lot of people might not even see it as sexual assault why.
Because it's not, I don't know. What do you want to label? I don't want to label it. They don't
play it as like this horrible moment for Rory until she's like, they play it as like, oh, Jess yelled at her. That's the real problem here. And not like Rory's traumatized because Jess almost.
Yeah, but the yelling is because he said you came up here yourself.
Right.
As in a kind of you asked for it thing.
But I feel like. The way that people might have seen it in the moment of that episode is not Jess almost did this horrible thing to Rory, but instead it's just Jess just yelled at the woman he loves and made her almost cry.
Right.
Which is like the thing that I feel like people would focus on.
You are saying that's the thing people remember.
Yes.
Because the
if you were asked why did she run out crying, like if Dean was like, why are you crying? And she was honest, I feel like the answer would have been, well, my boyfriend just yelled at me and not, I almost just got assaulted by my boyfriend.
Right.
So I think it's because of the way that scene was played, mm-hmm. and because we don't see it as a traumatic event for Rory, other than the fact that she was yelled at.
Right. But she does say stop or wait.
Right. It is a traumatic event.
It's, yeah.
But I'm saying they don't play
but
it as
play
like...
It, yeah, I guess it's kind of, it's a little more even-handed. Like, they underline the yelling more than they do the moment,
yeah.
I guess. So maybe, yeah, that's why people remember it like they do. Let's play another voicemail.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Debbie. My name is Fatima. I am calling from Canada. I am a Canadian ghillie.
Oh.
Shout the ghillies that are here. I'm hoping that you do make some visit to Toronto because I would cry to see you guys live.
I'm not allowed in Canada.
I'll be brief because I know how much you like your brief messages. So, yeah, if you guys were to live in a TV universe, which TV universe would you like to live in?
Oh, damn.
Yeah, looking forward to the next show. Thank you guys so much for being wonderful human beings. And, yeah, go Team Jess. Woo!
No.
I want to live in a universe where you do... No, I'm kidding.
You're not Team Jess, girl. A TV unit. I mean, well, you know, the Gilmore Girls universe is... What I give from the Gilmore Girls universe is this real sense of safety. I'm never on edge watching the show.
Right.
And I think that'd be a nice thing to experience in a daily life. But the universe I'd most want to live in...
It's hard because I feel like when you choose to live in a universe in TV, you're sort of putting yourself in like... A universe of, like, one of the, not the main characters, but maybe, like, if it's 30 Rock, you're like, oh, I'd be at the writer's table or something. Or if it's Parks and Rec, you'd be like, well, then I guess I work in the Parks Department. So, I don't know. I'm going to say Pawnee, because it's nice, and everyone seems pleasant, even though they kind of jokingly hate each other at the beginning.
Or I could say Springfield and just make Coldplay jokes the whole time.
Why do we make Coldplay jokes?
And they
jokes?
Were all yellow.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah. You would get cast out of Springfield real quick.
Smithers. What universe is... What did I want to... I mean, truthfully, the Sorkin universe, what did you just think?
I don't... Every time I think of Monk, I'd be like, I'd live in Monk's universe, but then I was like, but I'd hate Monk.
Hey, you know who's in Monk? Rose Abdu.
Yeah, she is.
She played Mrs. Monk.
Mm-hmm.
Sports Night was super appealing. Like... Oh, they're all attractive and hilarious and fast. And, like, that was such an idealistic, you know. And they cared about each other in a sincere way. Sports Night might have been, in some ways, the pinnacle of what Aaron Sorkin's done. Which is so funny, because in interviews he says, like, I'm not going to let my daughter watch Sports Night because I'm not proud of it.
Oh, my
it's
God.
What he said. When it's like, oh, yeah, here, Roxy, watch The Newsroom. You'd rather...
My pride and joy.
God. Anyway. Another voicemail.
Watch this monologue about me talking about why America sucks. My final answer is 30 Rock.
Okay. For what reason?
Just working in 30 Rock seems like not only the height of what it would be like to work in 30 Rock, but past that from a everyone is crazy standpoint where it's just everyone's a cartoon character in the funnest possible way. So mm-hmm. I imagine living in a world where Kenneth is this real, like, immortal man and Jack Donaghy is, like, an infallible Republican, like, ideal. And just all of these weird cartoon characters while also being someone who is a writer on this great, like, this cheesy TV show, but this great TV show. It's just pure fun.
It, I mean, and truly, and again, I watch it every year, or I have for the last couple years.
To.
Alec Baldwin and Tina Fey might be the best comedy or my favorite comedy duo I've ever seen.
They're great.
On a sitcom. I think they might, like, so perfectly cast. You forget how great Alec Baldwin is.
Right.
Until you watch it. And just everything is perfectly delivered. Good God, Lemon. Those jeans. Everything. Everything.
I love when he starts doing impressions with Tracy and he's like, okay, now you be Tracy. He's like... I'm not going to be, like, just his voice of Tracy is great.
The one with the Boys and Girls Club of America. Boys and Girls of America?
be great.
Another voicemail.
Hey guys, this is Diane calling from Asbury Park, New Jersey. I love you both, so my question is for Demi. Okay. I was wondering what your thoughts were if you wish that ATX would have been scheduled for now instead of back when it was, when you're first starting your run on the show. I feel like you know so much more now about the characters and the different plot lines, which the festival have been more fun, more meaningful if you had been midway through season 5. So just wondering what your thoughts were on that. Thank you, and talk to you soon. Bye.
I don't think it would have been much more different because it's only been a full season. Like, right. It was 4/13 when we did it,
yeah.
And we're going to do 5/13 in a week.
Yeah.
Aside from that, I would probably have, I don't know, it would have been, because we hadn't even met Doyle at that point, so it would have been cool to just have
or
some
no,
sort
we
of,
had, hadn't we?
If we had, it was very, we got very little of him.
Okay. But we hadn't met Logan, Matt Zuckery.
That's true. That was a very fun thing to have to be like, I don't know this character. I'm glad that meeting him didn't make me think, oh, but he's a nice guy, so I like him.
Yeah, again, we've been able to keep everyone from the show separate from their characters.
Yeah.
In a way, I'm kind of amazed by it. Like, I never think Scott Patterson and Luke are the same person. I never think Sean Gunn and Kirk are the same person. So I really don't think it would have been that much different.
No.
Stupid question, Diane. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Diane, we love you.
Hey, y'all. It's Carissa.
Hello.
I feel like Carissa. My questions are always Kevin and Demi related. But I was wondering what kinds of feelings you're feeling now that you're, you know, in the middle of season 5. Don't have much more to go. We're all very sad about it. But I just wanted to know what you guys were feeling as you get to the end. Bye.
Relief. Just kidding.
You know what's funny for me is I feel like a lot of people are like, it's going to end soon. That's so sad. And I feel like how people probably feel when they get into their 50s of like, we're nailing it. We are in a place where we are they accept the idea of the death coming soon, and they're also simultaneously like, then let's just have fun with it here.
Right.
Like, I'm no longer concerned about doing everything proper. I'm not concerned about like, oh, I don't want to say too many things about these characters because, you know, they might change. I'm just like, here's what I think right now. I'm getting to the hump where it's like an old person who's like, look, I'm going to die soon. I'm going to tell you guys everything that's on my head, and some of it's racist.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Except not racism.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think that's definitely true in your case, because there's just, like Sarah said, there's just so much to play with now.
Yeah.
And the trust has been built up so much in doing the show, and people have come along for so much of it. Yeah. So that's definitely true in your case. In my case, I'm terrified.
Are you?
Lights closing in. Here's what I'll say.
The tunnel is so, so deep.
Tunnel of Love. 1988, great album. 87. Tour was 88.
Kevin just looked
to no one.
Kevin just looked to the left as if he was doing the whole recall folder thing in his head with, was that Springsteen?
Yes.
Yeah, of course it was. He's just like, 88? No, that's wrong. No, 87. It should have been 87, because I was in Houston. I was in Houston, and the lights were... I remember, I crawled out of the fetus, and it was... I crawled out of the fetus.
I crawled out.
I crawled out of the womb, and Born in the USA was playing, and it was 1989. I remember it like it was...
Okay. Oh, man. Oh, my feelings would just be... I have anxiety over... just what the next project is where we can still have an audience, you know? Next one. No, I truly have anxiety over that we don't repeat ourselves, that we don't do something that we're not excited for, and that we do something that people want or they would come to enjoy and appreciate at the same time. It's really hard. Because there's no pressure when you do something for the first time.
Right.
For the second time, the sophomore slump, all that stuff. And just like the medium of podcasting in general. Because we've not put out 2 episodes a week in over a year. And
I don't want to interrupt that flow at all. So for whatever it is, and maybe it's less, maybe it's one a week. I just love the medium of podcasting so much and am very grateful for it. I mean, how do you feel about the medium? Like, how have you found in doing it and in making this show together? Like, has it changed your perspective on it, or?
It hasn't changed my perspective so much. I've noticed that I listen to podcasts less now, mm-hmm. but I mean, I never really listened to that many podcasts. It's just a thing that I would do, like in driving or at work, if I can't, if I'm not listening to something that I'm editing or something. The weird thing for me is that no matter what we do next, I know that I'm not interested in being like a media critic. Like, I don't want to do a TV recap thing again,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not. As like, I'm not concerned with it being a hit, because I wasn't concerned with this being a hit. I'm just like, I want to do something that's cool. If 10 people listen to it, I don't care. Am I having fun?
Yeah, not whatever. A hit, but just something that like maintains the, yeah, because I don't want to put in those terms like we're just after the numbers, right. baby. Like, it's not.
I understand like the idea that it's like you want to like give this audience something that they'll love.
Yeah, and just like, you know what I mean by that? Like, just cater, not pander. Is that a good way of putting it? I don't know.
Right.
But something that's like, we're not going to forget the kind of people that made this show what it is, but we're not going to change our creative drive to suit them. So, like, I'm not going to do Buffy Bros because I don't care that much about right. Buffy.
Yeah.
Even if X amount of people would listen to it, that wouldn't be that fun. So, yeah. I guess I need to be less worried about it. I don't know. It's just taken up so much time in the last year that it's weird to think about the time when, damn it, Carissa. Anyway.
It's like retiring, you know? It's like if you retire, it feels like retiring if we stop this. And if we stop this, we have a bunch of time where we're just like, okay, what next? You know, we want to do something that's cool, but also we don't want to repeat the formula of what we did for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if we don't have to fulfill the obligation of, all right, we're doing 2 a week of Gilmore Girls, what do we do? And that's something that we need to think about. But I don't know. I don't even think about what's next, honestly. I'm just kind of like, we'll get to the end and then whatever. I'm so
and then
yeah. We cast our equipment into the sand and walk forth into the sea. I'm genuinely to a point where I'm just like, all right, we'll do Bunheads, and then who knows. And I don't really, I have ideas all the time and I write them down, but I'm also just like, wouldn't it be nice to take a break?
From podcasting?
Yeah, at least for a bit. Part of me is like, there's so much stuff that I want to do that isn't in the podcast world.
Right. So maybe you don't host a podcast again.
Right.
Wow. So maybe you're quitting the game.
But also, wouldn't it be nice to not have to host a podcast and just be able to do some other thing that you can do? You know, like try a different medium. We're still working together. We're still doing stuff, but it's not a podcast.
Right.
I don't know.
It would be, but
podcasts are just also so, like, they're so, there's an audience. And it's like, it's the thing where it's like, anyone can listen.
Here's the thing. It is, and for our show, like, we put a lot of work into it. But it's relatively easy, and the payoff is huge. Whereas something like when we worked on a thing a couple weeks ago that was for TV, it's so much more restrictions. Mm-hmm. There's so much more. Podcast can be anything as long as you want, whatever you want, and you totally control and drive that.
Right.
Whereas other mediums, for better and worse, have these limits on them. Like, it can't be longer than 21:30. You can't say these words. You can't talk about this too much because you're going to lose it. And you have to, you know, hair and makeup, whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so the appeal of podcasts is just like, you know, it's just there. It's just mm-hmm. out there. For me, I feel like podcasting is one of the only things I've ever felt really good at. So ignoring the medium is
would be tough in the future.
I don't think you have to ignore the medium, though. Just find another niche within it, you know?
Niche within.
Like, instead of doing, okay, well, I did Gilmore Guys, now it's time to do Buffy Guys. You could go like, all right, I did a podcast where I interviewed people. I could do another podcast where I interview people about something else entirely mm-hmm. different, you know?
Maybe a podcast about movies. Should we do a podcast about movies?
We could have games and invite celebrity comedians on, and John Hamm could be a regular. That'd be fun.
That's right. A game after we could play the Roger Ebert game.
I love it. And then Roger could come on himself. Oh. And, you know.
Ooh, I hated Siskel.
You'd be surprised what movies I enjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thought to think about. And too, the autonomy of like doing something together and then afterwards like, oh, we're still two individuals, you know. And like getting away from the, I guess we're going to find out who's the real Paul Simon in this group after this podcast.
Which one of us is going to go on?
You're Paul Simon.
Which one of us goes on Colbert and which one of us goes on Fallon? Because Art Garfunkel performed on Fallon recently.
And Paul Simon
was on Colbert.
Yeah.
You can call dibs right now. I'll let you get first straw which one you want.
I'm the Garfunkel. Okay,
you are not the Garfunkel. Don't Garfunkel yourself.
Hey, listen. What I do in the privacy of my own.
Go Garfunkel yourself.
Garfunk
yourself. That's my new...
Garfunk yourself?
Garfunk yourself.
Another V-mail. Thanks a lot, Carissa. Crap, it froze.
Play the Carissa one again.
So, Kevin and Demi, what's your greatest fear relationship-wise?
Oh, well, for me, it's...
Just kidding.
Hey, Demi. Hey, Kevin. This is Jacqueline from... St. Louis again. So the more and more you guys are playing the Time Machine clips of how WB promoted the show, I wonder if Amy Sherman-Palladino had a joke going during the Trix episode where she died and Lorelai freaks out because she can't figure out what fresh clothing is, and that was her response to every time the announcer says on a new fresh episode of Gilmore Girls. So I was just wondering if you guys agreed with my theory. It's in total theory all day long, but I don't know. Anyway, just wanted to hear your thoughts. Have a great day. Bye.
Well, one thing we've said on the show before is that all theories are true.
That's correct. Which is a bummer because I don't like knowing that they're all dead.
Yeah. All of them.
Everyone.
All of them. I probably not. I don't believe Amy would care that much what the WB is saying. Or maybe she would make fun of that. Because I tell you what, you know what actually might lend credence to that theory? Is when she did the upfronts for the Bunheads mid-season, she said, ABC family, a new kind of family. Whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah.
Like she said that. Or she said a version of that. Like, a new kind of family. They love saying that. A new kind of... So there's a history of her... mocking
right.
the networks that she's on.
I would love to hear from Amy that she's just like, oh, we did so much things that were just sort of in spite of the network
yeah.
and they never caught it. Because I think that would also add a level to where we go, okay, we weren't giving the show enough credit
yeah.
for them to, like, if that was the case, if Amy was like, yeah, the fresh was because they kept saying fresh Gilmore Girls and we were like, what does this mean? And then we wrote that in the script, I'd be like, oh, then there are so many things that we thought, oh, that's not
right.
a joke. And then, yeah. I would love to believe that.
If this character, Andrew, was actually based off of the WB president, who was real zero at the time.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Hey, this is Jordan McGill from Oregon, now living in New Jersey. I just
before.
Have a little bone to pick with Kevin.
Oh.
I think there's a little bit of confirmation bias in the way that you, Kevin, are reading the character of Emily. Because
uh-huh. you're both old.
You are attributing all of her negative characteristics to flaws in the writing when I think
oh.
those occurrences are common enough that you really have to consider them canon.
Nick.
Especially since it's not just non-Amy written episodes that are exhibiting these characteristics. I think that it's common enough that it really has to be considered a dimension of the character that she's so dismissive of Luke or that she's really, really not into the idea of anyone in her family being with someone poor. And you can still love Emily, but that is a wrinkle in her character that I don't think can really be dismissed.
A wrinkle.
Love you guys.
Soon.
Thanks for the show. Have a good one. Bye.
Wow, got put on trial there.
What flaws have you called out that are problems with the writing?
I think he's talking about in 507 and again in 508 where Emily's just, would you like another beer, Luke? Like all that stuff in 507. And then in 508, how her and Richard are just like kind of evil plotters for the man buffet and that stuff. And he's right. If something does occur and recur over time, that's just who the character. There's this old, third or fourth Sorkin ref in the episode, but like.
Oh, I thought you were going to go Aesop.
No, Aesop.
Real.
There's an old fable where someone was asking about a character and they said, why does CJ, or whoever the character was, why does CJ do that in this scene? This seems out of character. And Sorkin replied, no, it's not the character. The character just did it. As in, it's not of character if that's...
Right.
Because...
The character's changing.
Because, yeah, whatever the writer dictates as the character and what they do, ergo, is not out of character. Which is an interesting argument, because it's like, can an author make their own character out of character? Just given, like, so if, for example, if a writer writes a show where in the first four seasons, the main girl's like, I hate cheese. I'll never eat cheese. Cheese is bad. And then they're eating a big block of cheddar cheese in season five.
Right.
Is that out of character? You know, like, I mean, that's more factual than it is emotional and character.
Yeah. Because
character is characteristics. So maybe that's a bad example.
I think the weird thing about things like that is just it adds a dimension to the character that we have to... It's like it seems out of character because the idea of it being out of character is easier to accept than the idea that the character... has been misleading, that misleading the narrative is part of the character that's been intended all along.
Yeah, like, and that seems like a real switcheroo.
Right, it's a trick, and mm-hmm. that's not as fun. The thing that I will say about Emily in particular is that, and I hate that they do this, but they sort of lean to the idea that Emily is the mean one in Richard and Emily's dynamic, because they make her out to be like... so stodgy and like, and sometimes just overly rude, and they play Richard as more manipulative, but simultaneously like the kindly old grandfather, mm-hmm. you know, like he's always like the scene of Rory in the pool house is like, he's still being kind, even though he understands that there's a trick being played on him. And Emily simultaneously, if she were in that situation, would be like, Rory, you shouldn't meddle in these affairs. And it's, I don't like that they play Emily as the meaner of those two if they're supposed to be in love with each other and they're supposed to be, in a way, foils of each other.
Right.
So.
Wait, you don't like that they're meaner because it just puts Emily, it just makes Emily the bad guy?
Yeah.
Even though her and Richard probably agree?
Right. But it's like, it makes Emily the bad guy. And then when we see Emily versus Richard, the automatic thing that I think is, oh, Richard's probably in the right here because Emily's usually really mean. And I just go,
yeah.
What? Like,
but, you know, I've seen that even in my own grandparents. I see that dynamic.
Right.
Where it's like the but I guess you're saying on a storytelling level. But that's not in character versus
it's not
out
a
character.
Flaw. It's
just not fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. But going
I
back
wish
to
Emily
the,
were lighter, basically.
Yeah, and the episodes in which she is are a lot more fun, mm-hmm. right? And going back to Jordan's point, I think, yeah, confirmation bias, it might be there. I guess the thing I should say then is not this is out of character, because that's so declarative and definitive,
right.
even though it's still an opinion, but that, I don't like this of this character, you know?
Yeah.
I don't enjoy this of this character. I mean, that's not out of character. And there's going to be a lot of interesting out of character or you don't like the character debates as we get into seasons 6 and 7, I would say. Those debates start to crop up a lot. So I should probably, it's a good point, and I take it to heart. Thank you, Jordan. Do you want to hear a voicemail? And then a
Hi, Kevin and Demi. My name is Shobna. I'm a huge Gilmore Guys and Gilmore Girls fan all the way from New Delhi, India.
Wow.
I'm still catching up on the show. I'm just currently listening to the ATX festival roundup you guys are doing. But anyway, In the process of listening to you guys talk about the ATX, I decided to YouTube the video, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to watch it. And I was looking at other videos from the ATX Festival. And then, of course, because I'm Team Jeff, I started to look at Milo Ventimiglia videos. And I found the greatest thing ever. And I thought, if you guys haven't seen it already, maybe this would make your day. So I'm sure you know, you've heard recently of this Bollywood actress called Priyanka Chopra, who is in Quantico. The new ABC show Quantico. She had has a disastrous music career where she's done god-awful songs with Pitbull and has used autotune to the point of making Glee jealous. But anyway, she has a song called I Can't Make You Love Me, in which her love interest or man friend or whoever in the video is played by none other than Milo Ventimiglia. And it is the most hilarious, amazing, depressing, god-awful thing ever. And Priyanka Chopra says yes to the Jess is all I'm going to say. But anyway, so you guys should check it out. And I hope you hate it as much as I do. Thanks for everything you guys do. You've become my morning commute obsession. Thanks. Bye.
First of all, so cool to hear from anyone that's not, I don't know, like, I always think of like, oh, people in New York listen to it, but it's like someone in India is listening to this show and enjoying it and calls in. It's just so amazing. Second of all, I'm going to look it up right now.
Yeah, we're going to find that video.
Okay.
You got what's mine?
Great, we got to hear the beeps before it.
Oh, he's getting sexual with that girl.
Oh, is this what do you mean? I love this song. No joke.
You do?
What do you mean? Oh, what do you mean? Oh, it's an ad for Vivo. Whatever.
Oh, it's a cover of the good R&B song. Here we go.
Waiting for the drop already.
She's a very beautiful young lady. Okay. She's singing. She's in a beach.
There he is.
Oh, shit.
It seems like she's already made him love her.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like she can.
This is an ad for cotton.
And beats!
Yeah. Why does every music video has the people using Beats headphones? And I thought it was a rap. Oh. There are some great shots in this video. If you aren't already, if you're not driving, you should watch the video along with it playing in this.
Oh, man.
Is he going to jump into the pool with her?
I hope so. I hope
so. Yeah, he is!
Oh. Yeah! Oh, my gosh. She looks like someone else, but I'm trying to figure out who it is. Is she good on Quantico?
I haven't seen it.
Is it?
Oh! We got some Festival of Color powder on his face.
Is she drawing on him? Okay, she's crying. Okay, she's throwing paint at him?
Yeah, dude, that's holy. So this is clearly... They keep showing close-ups of them putting their faces together, and he just has this face of like... Love the glitter falling. That's clearly New Year's.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, they're taking selfies.
And they fell. Oh, what ad is that? That's the Microsoft Surface phone or something?
Selfies.
Some Windows phone.
I'm committed to watching this whole thing.
I am too. I'm sorry for anyone who's listening, but this is the show now.
This is the show.
All right, here we have the Calvin Klein ad.
Yeah. It is a lot of ads. Okay, so it's black and white.
Mm-hmm.
They're really quoting a lot of American things.
This is like the Mr. Robot of advertising. Everything's a reference.
Yeah. Not everything was a reference, but a lot of things were. I agree.
This is a very well shot video, and everything is perfectly lit.
Oh, the color correction I actually do think is beautiful on it. Like, I wish I could color correct to that point. I wonder what they shot on. Oh, he's looking at the window sad in shorts.
It's definitely the breakup.
Okay.
You know what I hate about sad music videos is the whole thing of, like, them sitting on the floor doing the whole, like, bending over and aching and singing in an empty white room.
Oh, he's kind of... He's kind of being rough with her. He's like yelling at her. Oh no. Oh, up against the wall, screaming.
I don't know if it's sexual. Nope, not sexual up against the wall. Very mad up against the wall.
But it could be. I mean, because they could go into... Oh, he's
leather
storming
jacket.
Out. He's storming out. He's wearing a leather jacket.
He's storming out, which means he just said I love you
yep,
to her.
Yeah. The- Oh, my gosh.
Their wind machine is working overtime in this video, might I also say.
Yeah, there's wind.
She is standing
everywhere.
In a hurricane.
Okay, she just flipped his picture.
She's over.
She's done.
She doesn't want to make him love
her. And she's going to go out into a new world. But now
run
she's
to
running.
Narnia.
Run to Narnia, Priyan Chopra. Why? Wait, is she... What?
She's
what?
Going for a jog.
What? Why is she... Why is she running away at the end?
Because she's not going to make him love her, all right? I'm glad we did that. That was great.
That was a lot of fun.
I did not like the song. It felt like I was in a rave trying to find a drug dealer or something.
The original song is amazing, obviously. Was that Bonnie Raitt?
I have no idea.
I can't make you love me. Look up the original ones.
The first result is Bon Iver. No, it's Bonnie Raitt.
Oh, but Bon Iver does do one. That's
sure.
really good.
Iver or E-Rate? That's the new game we play on this show.
Iver or E-Rate?
Mm-hmm.
It's just where you're mad about something.
Which Bon?
I'm mad about you. Not you. Someone thought, who is it? My friend, my old friend Tim, the man who broke my heart. He thought.
You don't have to give him a name. I believe you.
Yeah. He thought it'd be funny if they recast. I don't know how we got to this point. If they recast The Fighter.
With Paul Reiser?
With Paul Reiser. So he says.
As Mark Wahlberg or as Christian Bale?
No, as Mark Wahlberg. So he goes, I'm mad about you. Not you. Not you. And not you.
Not you. Not you. You, Helen. You, Helen
I'm
Hunt.
Mad about you. Oh, mashups are fun. Okay, here we go.
Do you remember that infinite loop video that someone made that was just him going, it's about me, not you, not you, not you, not you, not you, not you. Just like ad infinitum, not you.
I remember the one where there was it was a video where people said like, me, not you, me, not you.
Yeah.
So good. David O. Russell, the man who's hitched his career to Jennifer Lawrence. Here we go.
Hey guys, I already left a message, but I sounded like an absolute idiot, so I thought I'd start again.
No, you're fine.
This is Becca from Dublin, Ireland.
Ireland.
Obviously, I'd love you guys to come over here, but it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. I was just wondering, do you think that if Gilmore Girls was set in modern times, 2015, do you think the show would be a lot different? Because, I mean, like, Rory wanted to be an international correspondent, but with everything that's going on in, like, Syria, she'd probably, I'd say, wimp out. She'd be a bit, cause a bit dangerous, like, especially for Americans. So I was just wondering, do you think it'd be a huge difference? And do you think because of the writing back then and everything that they kind of... Because nowadays, we've changed so much as a society since then, and we're a lot more accepting.
Ooh, got louder.
And we don't really make as many jokes because we're more sensitive to that kind of stuff nowadays. Do you think Amy Sherman-Palladino would have had to have written a lot more tame, or do you think she would have gone all out, or do you think she would have called on different groups, or I was just wondering. Okay, well, have a...
Different groups.
Great time. Bye.
I wasn't quite following what she said at the end.
I think she was saying that because of how the landscape has changed from things like, you know, she wanted to be a foreign correspondent, but she couldn't do that as easily
I understood
now.
That part, but
right.
I didn't know...
I think she was also saying, like, do you think that there would have been, like, would it be more serious? What would have changed if Gilmore Girls was happening now? I don't think she would have gone less funny with it. If anything,
no.
I think she would have leaned heavily either one way or the other in terms of comedy or drama instead of trying to mix them so frequently.
Yeah, she might have made it more I think to the original thrust of what Becca was asking about. By the way, Becca... That was a badass accent. Ireland, Irish accents. Super cool. The Christiane Amanpour thing was season one. It was pre-9/11. And also, Wait, I'm just putting this together now. She wants to be Christiane Amanpour. She doesn't want to get involved in the story in 507.
So yeah. She wants to be... She wants to be the person in the newsroom who is going, and let's go out to our correspondent on the field.
but journalists don't get involved. So maybe if Gilmore had premiered post 9/11, then maybe that idea would have been like, maybe it would have been asterisked, but I don't know, or if that's a word, maybe it would have been, there would have been a footnote to it. Like
caveat.
Yeah. Caveated. Like she says to Dean Charleston, excuse me, Headmaster Charleston, like, I know it's dangerous out there right now, but I want to be on the front lines. I want to be Christiane Amanpour. Maybe even just that little bit. Maybe that would have, but I don't think it would have fundamentally changed. Or maybe the idol would have been different. I want to be Megyn Kelly when I grow up.
I want to be
Greta Van Susteren.
Fox's Andy Levy. I think the whole thing of her being a journalist at all is, and this is not to insult journalists, but I think that saying that she wants to be a journalist is something that she can do that's very high-minded while simultaneously keeping the character of a sort of quiet, mousy woman who is not act like, she couldn't be like, I want to be a politician because then she'd be running for stuff. She couldn't be like, oh, I want to be an environmentalist because then she'd also be very, like, she'd care so much about certain mm-hmm. things. But as a journalist, she can be like, I'm interested in this. I don't have a personal stake in too much of it, which I think is...
And I don't have to give my opinion.
Right.
And this is, too, really before news was dominated by opinion. Like, the idea of, like, I want to be a reporter, journalist. Now it's so much, like, news is... It's so much bled into each other, even the people who are neutral.
Yeah.
It's like, you have to be a Rachel Maddow. You have to be... An O'Reilly, like that, like that's who people think. Oh, or maybe not. Maybe that's just cable news. Whatever. Next female.
Hey, Demi and Kevin, this is Pamela calling from Connecticut. I'm wondering, the show has done such a good job of fleshing out these realistic, three-dimensional female characters who kind of belong to different archetypes and sometimes even stereotypes. I'm wondering if you think. Jane Sloan Palladino gave the same amount of attention and care to developing the male characters on the show.
Nope.
Whether or not the male characters fall into any of the archetypes or stereotypes that you can recognize in literature, film, other TV shows, and whether or not they resemble real life human men, because sometimes I doubt that. I'm also wondering if you've seen Parenthood, I'm watching it, and at the end of the second season, and it's gotten so real. And I guess Lauren Graham is just amazing at playing single moms who have been put upon. I mean, her character is constantly on the verge of tears and frustrates me to watch because she absolutely should have an Emmy by now. And she doesn't. Well, thank you so much. Bye.
What I'll say about the Emmys is Amy Poehler and Steve Carell don't have Emmys either. So right. It's okay.
I think the problem with an Emmy is just like, if she gets nominated, she's going to be put in drama against all of these people who do, like, very, like...
High-minded.
Yes. So it's like if you're like, I wrote this nice short film. It's like, that's okay. You're going up against Christopher Nolan.
Right.
It's like, but I did a very good job. But Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. And when we talk about, you know, Gilmore didn't get Emmys and it didn't blah, blah, blah. It's a very formalized measure of recognition that's not, it's not analogous to, you know how many Emmys ER has? Who gives a shit about ER anymore?
Right.
Are there ER message boards where people are writing frick?
Modern Family wins an Emmy like every year.
Modern Family streak, frickin' Big Bang Theory winning so much. You know, that Tony Shalhoub won over Jason Bateman in Arrested Development.
He won for Monk?
Yeah.
Good on him.
A few times, I think.
Hey,
I think,
great on them.
Good.
All of a sudden, the Emmys mean something to me now.
You know what? The Emmys are the best. But it's not... It's award show... One thing that I've learned, I feel like, since working in L.A., is that the Emmys don't actually mean anything. They just mean something to people who could give you jobs. It doesn't mean anything to, like, me as a viewer... and 99% of viewers. But the people who are like, oh, what about this person for this job? They care that, like, well, they were Emmy nominated or they won an Emmy for this particular thing. And they are in the position, seat of power to say, like, let's cast her, let's cast him.
It's all marketing. It's what they can go. If you see an ad that says Academy Award winner something, they want you to go, oh, well, the Academy only gives it to good people. Yeah. So I guess this is a good thing to watch.
Also not true.
Right. Bad people have Emmys.
Yeah. And bad people have... So it's not... But going back to the original question, and I think we covered it enough already, right? Like, just, yeah, there's some things that are not as archetypal as far as the men. I guess Luke's like the grumpy diner owner with the heart of gold. Maybe that's the archetype.
I'm still trying so hard to figure out the archetype of, like, the person who comes to town and saves them reluctantly. You know? It's like, I wish I could... It's not Dances with Wolves, but it's someone who is like, someone who like would break.
You think Luke does that a lot?
Well, it's just like the archetype of the person who's just like comes to town and maybe they get like a flat tire and they're like, oh, okay, I got to get out of this place and I'll just stay here for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And while they're there, everyone's like takes a liking to him. And he's just like, I don't care. I'm out of here. But as soon as trouble comes, he's like, okay, I guess I'll help. Pretending like he doesn't care about people the entire time. Luke's whole thing is that he pretends he doesn't care, but he cares the most. I feel mm-hmm. like.
Yeah, although the pretending to not care was more of the earlier seasons, right? Because wears his heart on his sleeve a lot more, like when he's asking Lorelai, like, oh, how's Rory? How's she in school? Oh, that's great. That's good to hear. Oh, she broke up with Dean. Good. Right. You know, he's not good enough for her. Let's do one more voicemail and then maybe one or two emails.
Hi, this is Rebecca from Dublin. I was just wondering, do you think that now that you're in the fifth season, whatever happened to Mr. Kim, like, what's he doing? Is he still working to help Lane? I have a theory that maybe he's working with, I think her name's Soojin, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But I think he might be working with her to help Lane do something, but I don't know what it is yet.
Mr. Kim says
big
hello.
Fan. Wish you guys luck. Keep watch season 7. It's not that bad. I hate season 6. I think it's the worst one. I think season 7's okay. And yeah, hope you give it a try. Bye.
Was that the same person? It was. That's okay.
The question is, what do we think Mr. Kim's up to now?
Essentially, and her theory is that Keon is a messenger on behalf of Mr. Kim.
I like to think that Mr. Kim is super supportive of Lane, and he's mm-hmm. just the roadie for Hepalien. And we never see him because he's like, when we see Hepalien, they're loaded out. So,
right. But I just like the idea of Keon's like, Lane, he's safe. He wants me to tell you he's safe, and he misses you. And he'll make contact again soon.
I want to talk to him. You want too much, Lane Kim. Be happy I've given you this.
Little does Lane know.
Any requests, and the next thing you'll see of him is a finger in the mail.
This one's short. This will be the last one.
Hi, Demi. Hi, Kevin. I'm Daniela from Austin. I'm just sitting in the middle of Guadalupe and 24th. I guess my question... What I was thinking about right now was, like, what would a Gilmore Girls show be like if it was set in Texas or in the South? Okay, bye!
It would be like Nashville.
Oh, gosh. More like Assville. Yeah, that's funny.
Sick burn on Hayden Panettiere and Connie Britton.
By the way, if we were to start a Parenthood podcast, would you want to call it Planned Parenthood?
Oh, my God, no. For many reasons. One, people would come and listen to the podcast and be like, this isn't about...
This isn't what I wanted.
This isn't about the thing that I'm trying to save. I would... If we started a Parenthood podcast, we'd have to call it Parrothood. Just us repeating things from Parenthood.
Parenthood. Parenthood, Parrotheads.
Parentheads.
Parentheads. Heads.
We're not going to start a Parenthood podcast.
No, it's not going to happen. I'm going to rewatch that show, though, because I think it's worthwhile. Especially, I think it'd be fun to get entrenched in another family drama where the stakes are low and personal again. And to see, because truly, Parenthood is the only show of its kind on, or was the only show of its kind on network. Everything now on network is high concept genre. It's got, or it's a procedural. There's nothing that's like, it's a family and they kind of, you know, have their differences. There's nothing on TV that's like that now, unless it's on ABC Family or something.
Family. ABC Family.
You say family? That's what my next movie should be. Fast and Furious 8, exclusive to ABC Family. We're going to drive the cars over to Shailene Woodley's house, and I'll pick her up and take her to Planned Parenthood to get her for a checkup, because I care about my family.
Family.
She may not be a con. She may be a conner, but she's also a Toretto. You feel me? Jordana Brewster was pregnant in the last one, and in this one, she's going to get pregnant again. But because of her husband isn't there, I'm going to take her to Planned Parenthood to get a checkup to make sure everything's okay, because I care about my family. That's my nephew and her. Go see The Last Witch Hunter. That's my movie now.
Oh, brother. Go see The Last Witch Hunter.
It's going to be great. I drive a car. I kill some witches.
But you know what's the most important thing?
What? What's that, Vin?
Family.
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 Number one.
Wait, do you think... So his favorite network is ABC Family.
Of course it is.
What do you think his favorite sitcom in the 70s was?
Family Matters. Or Family Ties.
Or All in the Family.
All in the Family. Oh, I loved All in the Family. Because when I saw that, I was like, I get it. I get it. I feel how the character feels. I am also all in the family.
He's all in on the family.
You know what show I didn't like?
What?
His sister, because they didn't have a family for a while. And then they found each other. And then they were each other's family. But that stressed me out when they didn't have a family. I don't like shows with orphans. I don't like Boy Meets World. I didn't like the other show with the orphans because it makes me stressed out. I go, well, how do you survive? You just have no family? That's fucked up. You come join my family. You come be a Toretto. You steal one car a day. And I need my cars.
Nazi glorious bastards. 100 Nazi cars.
I want my cars. This man wants to die for his country. Oblige him.
Jennifer writes in and says she came to the DC show and she said, I was just emailing to tell y'all that someone just messaged me on OKCupid asking if I had heard of the Gilmore Guys podcast.
Are you married now?
Based probably. Well, let me get to it.
Sorry.
Probably on the fact that I put Gilmore Girls as one of my favorite shows, and I said I was into podcasts. I typically don't respond back to guys on OKCupid, but he got a reply based on that.
I mean, my two questions are, why be on OKCupid if you're not going to reply to anyone? And secondly, I don't have a second question.
There's creepers on, there's plenty of people not worth replying to.
That's great.
Oh.
Wait, was there a question or?
No, that was just her telling us.
I hope that someone tells me on OKCupid, like, hey, you heard of Gilmore Guys? And I'll be like, no, what's that? It's a Gilmore Girls thing. I don't know it. It sounds stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, like, I flash forward 15 years from now if we're both still alive.
15? No.
If we haven't blown our brains out. Well, you're going to live forever.
Right.
I might have taken myself off of this sweet mortal coil by
then. But forever's
not
so long.
Yeah. No, I disagree. I think forever is a long time to be without you in my life. I want to keep you by my side because forever is a long time.
I couldn't know what song this is.
Forever is a long time. I don't even know what that song is, but it is a song.
It sounded like a melody from a different song.
Well.
Anyway.
Emily wrote in and said, oh, she's talking, this is about Iron Glass. She listened to, we talked to something about how great it would be if Ira came on. And Kevin said that he couldn't imagine Ira Glass criticizing the Gilmore Girls. Well, I saw Ira Glass in 2007 when he was promoting a book he edited, The New Kings of Nonfiction. During the show, he did sort of shop talk about how he made This American Life and stuff. He talked about music cues and how important they are and how they can really draw you into or take you out of a story. Then he said that he loves Gilmore Girls, but that they have the worst music cues. And I remember it because I was watching a lot of GG at the time. And because it was literally the first time I'd ever thought about music cues, and I had no clue that the ones at Gilmore Girls stood out for any reason, good or bad. Just like Ira Glass throwing shade on Sam Phillips.
The music cues in this show are abysmal.
Act one, I didn't like that G chord. Act two, la la la, think of a different one.
Act three, white lines, really?
White lines?
I didn't think it was funny.
Vision, dreams, of passion. You know. All right. Oh, that's fun. There's probably one more good email. Oh, well, I want to give a stars haul out to this girl. Nicole wrote in, and she said, sometime in season three, you talked about someone making a list of all Kirk's jobs up until that point.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I hadn't done a marathon of Gilmore Girls in a while, so I decided I would try to tackle this task. Among the list are of real jobs are the odd jobs he picked up around town or some quirky things he did at times. Though in season five, he says that he has had 15,000 jobs.
It's too many jobs.
I definitely didn't have that many. I think I got most of them throughout the whole series. So this girl made us a comprehensive list of every single job. I'll just read them for, you know, just a small sampling from the beginning. 102, Mick, DSL installer. 103, Swan Delivery. 105, Dosey's assistant manager. 108, Warren reenactor. 110, Jesus and Christmas pageant. 115, softball enthusiast. 121, flower delivery. 201, background mailman. 202, engagement party bouncer. And it goes on, and it is for every single thing in the show. It's so phenomenal. And we so, so appreciate it. So big stars all out to Nicole for making that for us. How should we use that as a reference document?
I feel like the best thing to do is to just publish it or to just use it to discuss what our favorite jobs are.
Sure. So let's talk about where we are. I'll just do season five. So 504, town select man polar. 506, hot dog. 507, delivery man. 509, town meeting bouncer. 510, entrepreneur, bath and shower adhesive decals, cowbell player. 511, Lulu's audition manager / reenactment whore. So that's where we are now. Reenactment whore. Wow. Nicole.
That's what they call them in the show. Repeatedly.
It's true.
Should we rate the episode?
You know, Jessica writes in. You know, Jessica writes in.
You know. That's not.
Mr. Huxtable.
Yeah, that's not really a...
Dr. Huxtable. I finished listening to your podcast about the season two finale. Some of these are old, which brought up a memory I'd like to share. And I think I singled this out because I connected with this memory. You guys were talking about 9/11, and it had me thinking about that day and what I was doing. I was only 13 at the time and living in a small rural town in Missouri. I remember our class being told about the planes crashing, but at the time, it didn't really register how big of a deal it was or that there was a terror attack. That night, it was a Tuesday, which meant Gilmore Girls was supposed to be on, I remember being slightly upset. The Gilmores had been preempted by news coverage. Now, please don't think I was heartless and cared more for TV than the thousands of innocent lives lost that day. I was only 13. I lived in a small town, and I felt like there was no way I could be affected by what happened. And it was a time before you could catch up on episodes you missed online. Gilmore's was my favorite, and I do remember feeling guilty for wishing the news would stop and play that night's episode. I have no idea if it was the first episode of the season, but I do remember it was supposed to be a new episode. So it's a 9/11 memory. And the reason I connect with it so much is because I was not allowed to watch Simpsons growing up because it was disrespectful and eat my shorts, and now The Simpsons is like... on network TV, like the most tame depiction of like a nuclear traditional family. It's crazy.
It's my favorite show.
So anyway.
Continue.
We weren't allowed to watch it. And I wanted to. And so I was like, Mom, Dad, I really want to watch this show. So I made like a case for it. I went online and I went to these Christian websites and blogs that said, actually, The Simpsons is a positive influence in this way and blah, 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 blah. And I printed out these articles that were real. I didn't like make them up.
Yeah.
And I put them in a 3-hole punch binder. And I was like, Mom, see, I think I should be allowed to watch The Simpsons. I don't think it is disrespectful, and I don't think it will be a bad influence. And eventually, she conceded the point, and she said, okay, you can watch The Simpsons. I was 11 years old, and the next day was 9/11, and I couldn't watch it because of all the 9/11. So my memory of 9/11 was, I've been working on watching, being able to watch The Simpsons for forever. Reruns 2 days every weekday.
Al-Qaeda ruined this for me.
Al-Qaeda ruined my Simpsons. So I always associated with that.
Mm.
I always associated with like, oh man, it's the thing that like annoyed me because it delayed my viewing of The Simpsons.
Right. All I remember from 9/11 is I was in class, and I don't know if we were, I don't think we were sent home. But I remember them going like, oh, something happened in New York this morning. And then the day kind of continued. And I don't remember when I registered that a tragedy had occurred, like a big tragedy. Right. But I remember in the moment, I did not think, oh, wow, that's crazy. I just thought, oh, guess something's happening in New York. That's a bummer. And then.
Yeah, I was truthfully, I was literally asleep when it happened because I was homeschooled.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad was home, which was unusual. That he like drove to work and then came back. And my first thought was, it's World War III. That was my first thought waking up. So really? Even at 11, I was like, oh man, shit's going down. But, and then my second thought was, damn it, I want to watch The Simpsons. Amanda wrote in and she said, I want to acknowledge something that keep waiting to come up. I notice you guys are continually mentioning the couple of Babette and Maury. Yet it has to be mentioned that we haven't actually seen Maury in the show since season 3. What happened to Maury? Any theories on where he has been?
He's been touring with a ska band with the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones.
Does Maury not make an appearance after season 3?
I hope he does. He's got to come back.
Now I want to IMDb it. So, yeah. Okay, so your theory, Demi, is that he's on tour with the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones.
Or Real Big Fish. Or Goldfinger.
Or how about the OC Supertones. Do you know who they are?
Yeah.
Supertone Stripe Back.
Basically, any band from the Tony Hawk Pro Skater soundtrack had Maury on a rotation of trumpet playing in this era.
The trumpet! okay, last email. Kimberly wrote in and said, it sort of freaks me out. Oh, I'll back it up. It's really interesting to see how my opinions on certain characters have changed. I no longer wish that my mother was like Lorelai. It sort of freaks me out that the only person Rory had growing up was Lorelai, who has such an extreme personality. Rory is kind of just a small, more sensible Lorelai clone. It makes me wonder how much of Rory is Rory and how much of her is just Lorelai condensed into a less angsty teenager. Do you think Rory's personality would have been different had she grown up with a more normal mother? Obviously, their mother-daughter relationship is wonderful because they're so close, and I truly believe Lorelai is a great mother, but as I'm rewatching, I can't help but feel a little bad for Rory. Seems like she had no chance to become her own person. P.S. I, too, think Jess is a punk during this rewatch. This, too, is a new opinion. So, again, an example of evolving opinions over time.
What was the initial question of whether or not...
There's no question. I'm sorry. The question was, do you think Rory's personality would have been different had she grown up with a more normal mother?
Well, definitely.
Just as if any of us had different mothers.
Right.
But I guess specifically how.
She probably wouldn't have been as, knowledgeable of pop culture or as... sort of quick to make a reference to sort of bounce back from something.
But do you think she was yanging her mother's yin on purpose, you know?
Yes.
So if her mom was Emily, she would have been Lorelai, for example. Or something similar, like she would have been feisty
That's an interesting thing to think about, just the idea of like Emily is one way, Lorelai is a reaction to that by going way the other, and... Rory is sort of the leveling out of going the other way. It's like Goldilocks and Three Bears. Like, Emily was too big of a personality.
Too cold, too small. Lorelai's too hot.
And Rory is the idea of this is just right, or this is the sort of person that would react from, my mom was cool, but she was also clearly a reaction to this kind of thing. And I'm okay with both of these worlds,
Right.
I think that if if Lorelai had been more of the child that Emily wanted, Rory would probably be she'd be probably not even as interested in journalism. She'd probably be more interested in something more, I want to say, like business or politics, mm-hmm. something where she's very, or even just by going the other way, she's like, I'm going to marry rich or something. Something where right. she's like, I want to sustain the level of power that I've grown up with or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an interesting thing to think about.
I think one thing I just thought about that I think is interesting is the way Lorelai is on the show, because you mentioned Rory is obsessed with pop culture because of her mom.
Right.
Like, it's definitely because of her mom. Lorelai lives in this small town that we traditionally think of as being very insulated communities. Like, oh, you know, there's the town square, and then the soda shop's open till 10 o'clock, and then we all leave our doors unlocked, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, Lorelai has such a literacy and knowledge, and it seems like a sort of thirst for things outside in the world and like popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie and this guy and this gossip and that TV show and that book and blah, blah, blah. Lorelai has a lot of curiosity that expands beyond the city limits of Stars Hollow.
Right.
Which I think is unusual for people living in small towns. Like, oftentimes they become very insulated. Or maybe it's not unusual. Maybe that's myopic.
I like
to
believe they had a Blockbuster that was in town and they closed just like the day before the first episode. Was like, oh, the Blockbuster closed. Hey, you're going to Chilton now.
Yeah, exactly. But it's an interesting idea of someone who like lives and is a part of the community in a small town in a healthy way, but still it has a wide view and vision of the world right. at the same time. Okay, one more voicemail, and then I got a fun thing for us to try.
Oh.
This person left the voicemail 5 minutes ago.
Hi, Demi and Kevin. This is Cameron calling from North Carolina. And I just had a quick comment or question about Rory and her friends. I think it's interesting that in high school, she had some friends, but not a whole lot. And, of course, they talk about how she's more bookish and introverted. But then it's funny how she gets to college, and she has a couple new friends, but not really that many more friends. And when you go to college, a lot of times that's when you meet all your friends, and they're exposed to all sorts of new people. And I kind of feel like they miss an opportunity to bring in some new interesting characters, kind of like townies, but townies at Yale. And so I thought maybe you could talk about that. And I think it's interesting, too, that even when she starts hanging around with Logan's friends, she never really fits in with that crowd. And they're kind of interesting. But anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up and see what you guys thought. I love the show. I look forward to every Monday and Wednesday. And I just love the whole thing. So have a great day. Thanks.
I think they definitely try with Janet and Tana and with Colin and Finn. But
Janet and Tana, I don't know if that was trying. Or if Janet and Tana were like, eh, look at these weirdos. You don't want to be one of them.
Really?
They made Tana so weird, and they made fun of Janet for running. Like, I didn't get the sense of, like, warmth from them, you know?
Yeah. I think every, like, tertiary character of people that are just supposed to be around Rory to give a place ambience
mm-hmm.
acts as the townies of that area. Like, I see Colin and Quinn as the townies of Yale. I even see Marty as, like, something more than a townie, but...
More than a townie.
Yeah.
When I see Marty and walk away...
boy. But basically, I think that they try, but they also very much want to keep up the idea that Rory is a loner or is not very outgoing.
Mm-hmm.
But she isn't. So for her to have a bunch of friends would be not like Rory, because then you'd be like, how do we balance all these friends she's got with her aspirations of being a very talented journalist? You know?
Yeah. It still doesn't feel like she ever found a community at college.
You're right.
Which I think it might be a character thing, but it also might just be like, it's a TV show. Here's our main characters. We can't spend so much time with these. But I guess she could do it in some way. I don't know how well you could do it, though. And still be true to, like, the core of the show. She still seems embedded in the Stars Hollow community more than any other community you see her in on the show.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Demi, I'm going to text you something right now that you'll need.
Are we rapping?
We're not rapping. Should we rap on these episodes?
Not on these. I think it's got to be a main event.
It does?
I want to do it in the episodes.
With the guests?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. If nothing else, have it be guests that it's like, either we do it like we used to where we record it and then put it into the beginning of the episode, or we ask the guests if they want to sing along.
Right.
Because with some, like with Darcy, that was great.
Darcy, Lauren was fun. Miss Lapkus. Okay, so we'll close on this.
Oh, right.
So Thomas, I'll give him full credit. Thomas McNabb wrote us an email, and he said, in the style of 507, I rewrote the lyrics of Where You Lead, I Will Follow to exclude any use of the letter E. So he wrote this for us. And now I think a fitting way. Oh, and blah, blah. Email GilmoreGuysShow@gmail.com. Leave a voicemail, 772-934-4559. And we'll answer it on the show. Thank you for all your email and voicemail. We'll respond to them all. What's that?
Emails.
And we will respond to them all. We're about halfway through all of them, I think.
Really? Good on us.
Well, we're halfway through all of them we've ever received.
Mm.
I think. I might be wrong.
Oh, boy.
So now Demi and I are going to attempt to sing Where You Lead, I Will Follow in the style of No Ease. Here we go.
If you is out on a road of abandon and so cold, all you should do is call upon my soul, and I'll bring forth my body on a train. Choo-choo, if you walk first, I will follow
anyway.
That you command, if you wish,
you wish
I should stand by you, I will follow. Oh, oh,
ow!
If you walk first, I will follow. Anyway, that you say I should, if you wish, you wish that I accompany you, I will follow your forward foot.
You know
is
what?
Because I like it.
Before we leave,
yeah.
Because I didn't get to do this at the live show, can I just perform the rap that I wrote that had no E's?
Yeah.
Here, 1 second.
Yeah. Do you want me to give you a beat? I forgot we didn't get to do that.
It's fine.
Wait, here, I'll give you a beat.
The thing about the beat is I don't know how fast I can do this. I'll just do it with no beat.
Okay.
Let me just set it up. So sure. Basically for 507... because someone wrote the idea that, like, hey, you should do a rap with no E's. At first, I was like, no, that's insane. And then I tried, and I did write one, but it was long, and we didn't have time. So here it is.
And to memorize it would have been...
Oh, I was like, I'm just going to read it. But here it is. So a task was laid for us to try to do a rap without a glyph for in front of I. No way, that's crazy. It's impractical, guy. But if anybody could, it is probably I. For our podcast, rapping was an old pursuit. Prior to all of this, trading raps was our route. As a swap for a paragraph about this cat, him and I put rhythms to your alias. I know that word wasn't satisfying, but so what? Writing this was surprisingly trying. Most words in this country have that thing I can't say. It is Rupert's only Paul that can say his own name. I almost said it. It's downright absurd. Cutting that unit cuts down most of my words. But you won't find that glyph anywhere you was looking. Not in L.A. or Philly or also in Brooklyn. That list was of a town to which Kate and I rap and pray to do it again. But not with this trap. It's not fun to do writing with a limitation. That glyph is my word, Jake. And this is castration. I'm sorry. That's gross. But also funny. How did I go so far without going all punny? It's so dumb I did this. It took way too long. But coming up soon is our closing song. So just hang on. I'm about to stop. Our show is concluding and I'm closing up shop. But don't think I'll slip up now that it's finishing. Our show's winding down, but my swag ain't diminishing. Look at you, all on the brink of your chair. This room is as stiff as Donald Trump's hair. Only way to fix it is around a bop it. Good thing Mike is without it, for now I must drop it.
Whoa! Holy hell,
that's
was
a lot.
Great! That was amazing.
You sound like Regis.
I love it.
It's great! Thank you.
Hey, Demi. Is that a new shirt?
Because I like it.
Goodbye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.